The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Research Squeeze, Threatened Funding Cuts Cloud the Future of Triangle's Life Sciences Ecosystem. And the article begins with the second headline inside the Triangle Business Journal, Research Pressure, one of the Triangle's major economic engines, is at stake as the Trump administration seeks to slash research funding. And this is written by Zach Ezone. Summer 2025 was supposed to mark a major inflection point for Andy Barrett's Chapel Hill company. Barrett is the president of Cessation Therapeutics, a pharmaceutical startup developing a treatment for people struggling with fentanyl addiction. Early signs show its treatment could help patients, but changes in federal policy have thwarted, at least temporarily, Cessation's efforts. We're losing about 80,000 people a year due to fentanyl and fentanyl analogs, said Barrett, so a pause in funding, I measure in deaths, which to me is unacceptable, when we have something here that can be a part of the solution. Since its formation, Cessation has raised about $30 million, with about half coming from private investments and the rest from federal agencies, such as the National Institutes of Health. Cessation is part of a broad research-based economic engine in the Triangle, from ambitious startups to universities, such as Duke University and UNC Chapel Hill, that fuels research through federal funding. Overall, the NIH granted $2 billion in funding to North Carolina in fiscal year 2024, with most of it concentrated in the Triangle. Duke received $580.24 million, UNC $531.33 million, and nonprofit RTI International $396.92 million. But the future of this funding is uncertain. Under President Donald Trump's administration, the NIH has slowed down or stopped its grant review process while also looking to reduce the funding universities receive for certain research functions. RTI announced another round of layoffs on March 25 that will impact 340 workers. Overall, RTI has permanently reduced its workforce by more than 500 employees since the beginning of March. NC State University has responded by pausing all hiring. Duke is undergoing a strategic review to prepare for potential losses and is admitting fewer graduate students. Losing millions in NIH funding would require UNC Chapel Hill to decide whether to cut costs in other areas to fund research, said Penny Gordon Larson, the school's vice chancellor for research. We don't have other sources of financial support for research functions and infrastructure, she said. That has a big effect on our ability to attract faculty and student talent, and it would ultimately have a negative effect on the university's ability to serve as a magnet for industry to North Carolina. Also in Chapel Hill, Cessation has felt the effects. Cessation has been preparing a crucial clinical study this summer that could advance its potential treatment and generate data to lure additional investments. Cessation's application for an $11 million NIH grant earned high marks in an initial review, but the NIH canceled a meeting scheduled for February where officials were supposed to make a final decision. No new date has been provided. We had high hopes for it, and now we're faced with this vector of, how do we fund this study, Barrett said. Can we obtain more private investment or venture capital funding to try to move forward while also continuing our day-to-day operations? Universities react. Cessation is one of dozens of organizations throughout the Triangle trying to operate in the new uncertainty. I don't know if anyone knows exactly what's happening or what will happen, said Ed Field, a partner at Cape Fear BioCapital, an investment firm focused on early-stage North Carolina companies. That is a problem because you can't plan, he says. The Trump administration in its early days paused the NIH grant review process, which has since partially resumed, leading to widespread confusion. This escalated to panic in February when the administration looked to lower the portion of NIH awards that can pay for facilities and administrative costs at universities. That would put a 15% cap on the share of funding that can be used to cover facilities and administrative or indirect costs like building maintenance and operating expenses. This would upend a long-standing practice of these rates being negotiated between universities and the federal government. Establishing this 15% cap would ensure that as many funds as possible go towards direct scientific research costs rather than administrative overhead, the NIH said in a statement February 7. Additionally, the statement said that implementing the new rate would bring the NIH more in line with private foundations that provide research grants with indirect cost rates between 10% and 15%. The NIH's average indirect cost rate is between 27% to 28%, but the amount varies between institutions. For example, Duke has an indirect cost rate for on-campus research of 61.5%, while the rate at UNC is 55.5%. NC State University, which received $48.28 million from the NIH last year, has an indirect cost rate of 52%. The move alarmed universities, with state attorneys general from nearly two dozen states, including North Carolina, suing in federal court to stop the measure. The lawsuit filed on February 10 said, "The effects of the rate change notice will be immediate and devastating, and the action will result in layoffs, suspension of clinical trials, disruption of ongoing research programs, and laboratory programs." U.S. District Court Judge Angel Kelly in early March issued an injunction temporarily preventing the policy change from taking effect as the court case proceeds, but universities remain concerned. NC State announced a hiring pause February 14, citing the uncertain impacts of the presidential administration's executive orders and guidance, among other factors. Duke President Vincent Price on March 13 asked administrators to lead a strategic realignment and cost reduction planning process. "We're working to prepare for the possibility that the university will have to adopt new ways of operating in order to fulfill our teaching, research, and clinical care missions with reduced federal funding in the future," Price said in a public message. Other elite universities have seen reduced federal support. The U.S. government in March canceled more than $400 million in federal grants and contracts for Columbia University in New York City due to the school's continued inaction in the face of persistent harassment of Jewish students, according to a statement from multiple federal departments. Meanwhile, Johns Hopkins University in March planned to cut more than 2,000 jobs, most of which are international, as the Trump administration slashes funding at the U.S. Agency for International Development. The NIH, as of mid-March, had canceled individual grants previously awarded to Duke and RTI. Duke estimates that the NIH's proposed facilities and administrative rate change would have cost the university about $200 million last year, said Jennifer Lodge, the university's vice president for research and innovation. Meanwhile, UNC's Gordon Larson estimates this change would cost the university $123 million in NIH funding annually. Maintaining and operating buildings where research occurs makes up the largest piece of this facilities and administrative funding, but this also includes administrative functions that support the research. "If we don't have the F&A, facilities and administrative, to support the infrastructure that supports research, we won't be able to do as much research," Lodge said. "If you think about $200 million, I don't want to put a number out there, but that's a lot of jobs." Duke has not yet made any sweeping changes, but the school is being strategic about the faculty it hires and is admitting fewer graduate students than in previous years. "When you admit a graduate student, we have a commitment to that student for 5 years," Lodge said. "And if we don't know what our finances are going to be, it's hard to make that commitment." UNC has not yet implemented a hiring freeze, but is evaluating where it expects to see research declines and adjusts appropriately, Gordon Larson said. But one graduate program at the school, the Biological and Biomedical Sciences program, has reduced admissions, and the university is not moving forward with certain facility or infrastructure projects related to research. "There's a lot of instability, and currently the situation is that we're waiting for the impact," Gordon Larson said. Room for reform. The NIH funding that universities receive extends beyond the schools. The funding can support technology developments that universities can patent and license out to existing companies or serve as the foundation of a new startup. Field co-founded Cape Fear BioCapital last year to make early-stage investments in these sort of startups. The firm is in the process of finalizing its first two deals, both of which have intellectual property from North Carolina universities. "We're relying on innovation to come from universities primarily, and if there's a cut in funding to that work, that's detrimental," Field said. The NIH fills a critical role in innovation that does not exist in other countries, said Dr. Ned Sharpless, who led the National Cancer Institute, which is part of the NIH, from 2017 to 2022. Sharpless previously was a professor at UNC Chapel Hill and the director of the UNC Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center. Although he agrees with some of the Trump administration's proposed reforms, Sharpless disagrees with the way that these changes are being implemented. For instance, Sharpless said conversations about reforming the U.S. biotech ecosystem should begin with the premise that the two federal agencies at the center of it, the Food and Drug Administration and NIH, are excellent organizations full of tremendously talented people. The first thing you have to say is, we're not here to blow up the NIH, we're here to make it better, Sharpless said. People would be much more eager to partner with you on that effort. As an example, Sharpless said the NIH could be restructured to be comprised of about 6 or 8 centers and institutes rather than the existing 27. Additionally, the NIH's plan to centralize the peer review process for grants and contracts is one that could improve efficiency, he said. For its part, the NIH claims this approach is expected to save more than $65 million annually. Although he does not support a flat 15% rate for indirect costs, as the Trump administration proposed, Sharpless said that the indirect cost rate at many universities is too high. I know I might get shot by a bunch of university chancellors tomorrow, but I think many at the NIH have been worried about this topic for decades, Sharpless said. For Gordon Larson, any conversation about reducing the rate would require reforms to regulations. If the federal government says we're only giving you 15%, that doesn't even come close to covering a fraction of what the government is telling us we need to do in the regulatory and compliance domain, she said. Dealing with uncertainty. Collaborations Pharmaceuticals, based on Centennial Campus at NC State, hit a setback when an NIH review meeting scheduled was postponed in January and then canceled in February. Collaborations earlier this year experienced delays in receiving money for a grant that the NIH has already approved. The company has also experienced disruptions with academic collaborations, CEO Sean Elkin said. He described the experience as a slow-motion train crash. I could see it in the distance a couple of weeks ago, and now I'm literally in front of the train, he said. I can see it because it's impacted us directly. Elkins formed the company around 2015 and has received NIH grants for around $23 million, including about $2.57 million in fiscal year 2024. That has supported collaboration's general research and development of products like the company's software, which it uses to find molecules for therapeutics applications in different diseases. What the funding has done is given us a really solid foundation, and along the way we've been able to build up and hire people and create jobs in the community, Eakins actually said. The company now has about 16 employees, while about half the grant funding has supported internal operations, including its research and hiring. The other half has gone to collaborators and other service groups that collaborations hires. Disruptions in NIH grant funding would be difficult to replace. Collaborations is developing an enzyme replacement therapy for an ultra-rare form of the genetic disorder, Batten disease. This is the type of indication that venture capital and private equity firms tend to avoid because of the limited upside for profitability, as it only affects about 20 children in the U.S. You could try to get angel investment, but again, what's the return on investment, Eakin said. Even if you make it a $1 million drug, that's only $20 million, and by the time you've taken away the cost manufacturing, maybe you might have a couple of $1 million profitability. Even for companies more attractive to investors, NIH funding is crucial. Grants and other similar sources of non-dilutive capital help advance early-stage research to the point where it becomes a less risky proposition for investors, said Phil Grayeski, a partner at KDT Ventures, which has offices in Durham and Texas. Usually, non-dilutive funding is the mechanism that's more than happy to do some of the riskier scientific experiments to help validate what might have some promise, Grayeski said. I know many examples in the Triangle of companies that relied on that grant funding to get going. For example, G1 Therapeutics, spun out of UNC with Sharpless as a founder, the company developed a treatment for cancer patients that gained FDA approval. The company was acquired last year for about $405 million. The National Science Foundation, which also faced disruption, is also crucial to smaller biotech companies. Atom Bioworks, a Cary firm developing new anti-cancer drugs, was authorized to receive about $800,000 when an NSF funds manager was fired without warning and without without a backstop to handle Atom BioWorks' account, said Adam Friedman, the company's director of research and development. We're in this very uncertain position of, do we have 3 months of funding from the NSF? Do we have 12 months? We don't know, Friedman said. It makes it impossible for a small business to accurately plan and strategize. Parts of the federal grant process seem to be improving. The NIH has begun rescheduling some review meetings, said Eva Garland, who leads a consulting firm that supports organizations in securing and managing grant funding. I do think that the commitment to human health is certainly there for NIH, Garland said. The big question going into the next fiscal year is, what exactly is that going to look like? What are going to be the funding priorities, and what's going to be sort of the structure in which the funding is available? This uncertainty is a major concern for organizations in the expensive world of drug development. There's this short-term uncertainty that people are just not sure where it's going to land and how it's going to affect them, said Field of Cape Fear BioCapital. The bigger picture uncertainty is really critical, is the really critical one, which is, will we fund innovation at the level that we've been funding it? Will that kind of level be sustained? Because if it's not, that's a critical issue for the innovation ecosystem. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman. High-pitched roof is sign of the times. Soaring roof lines give homes a sleek, modern look as new style emerges. It's easy to trace the evolution of a city from the style of homes in certain eras, and that's definitely the case in Raleigh. You have Victorian homes from the 1890s in Oakwood, Sears catalog homes from the 1920s in Five Points, and split levels from the 1960s throughout North Hills. The style that may symbolize this decade as new houses rise where old ones once stood is one featuring high-pitched roofs and flatter, sleeker fronts. You see that look across the triangle. One example is on Gate Street near North Hills, where a new home from Funderburk Builders spans nearly 6,000 square feet. Will Funderburk, who started his company in 2001, said the popular look now is kind of a traditional house with a steeper roof line with no overhangs. No overhangs means no soffit extensions to support a roof that extends out. The overall look is a sleek, airy feel and a distinct change from split levels of the Brady Bunch era and exemplified by the North Hill subdivision developed by Ed Richards in the early 1960s. A roof's pitch is a measure of its horizontal run, usually measured in increments of 12 inches, against its vertical rise. The lower the rise, the less steep a roof. So a roof that rises 6 inches for every 12 inches of run has a pitch of 6 over 12. That's a relatively low pitch that is cheaper to build because it has less roofing, but the home Funderburk is building on Gate Street has a pitch of 18 to 12. It's just a different look, Funderburk said. It's more of a modern look that people are liking. It's also a grander look for larger homes. The Gate Street home has a golf simulator, cigar room, gym, and bonus room. All those split-level homes, you could fit 3 into this house, he quipped. Bailey's acquires well-established Charlotte jeweler. Bailey's Fine Jewelry is making a major leap. Bailey's has acquired Charlotte's Morrison Smith Jewelers, located in a prime location in Myers Park. Morrison Smith has been in business for 70 years. Bailey's began in Rocky Mount in 1948 and also has locations in Raleigh, Cary, and Greenville. Bailey's president, Trey Bailey, said Morrison Smith is synonymous with quality. It's such a well-respected and well-run business, and we look forward to continuing that legacy while bringing the Bailey's experience to Charlotte, he said. Fast Casual Chicago concept opens in Fenton. A fast casual concept out of Chicago is now open at Carey's Fenton Development. Doc B's restaurant and bar features burgers, its signature walk-out bowls, fresh salads, desserts, and more, plus a curated selection of craft beer, wine, and cocktails. The restaurant prides itself on each location having its own personality, and the Fenton spot is no exception. The location has a spacious outdoor patio with a pergola, heaters, misters, and fans. After basketball implodes, it's time to play ball. The Faceplant by the Atlantic Coast Conference and the men's basketball tournament, except for Duke University, of course, has Biz looking ahead to baseball, and it's not long before the local minor league teams are in action. The Durham Bulls open the season on the road before returning home for their home opener April 1st. The Carolina Mudcats open at home April 4 in what is scheduled to be their last season in Zebulon before moving to Wilson. Thank goodness for that and for the local women's teams. And finally, Raleigh loses legendary leader in Roddy Jones. Roddy Jones was smart, funny, and savvy when it came to business, but perhaps his real gift as the son of a developer and mayor was a keen ability to see beyond the horizon and grasp what Raleigh could be. Jones, who died March 24 at the age of 88, was one of a small group of people who helped build the region in ways beyond physical structures. He helped shift his father's firm, Davidson & Jones Construction Company, from residential to commercial real estate, and the company drove the dazzling development of Crabtree Valley Mall in 1972. But the edifices of success that also included the Highwoods Business Park and the American Airlines Terminal were exceeded by Jones's passion for building up the community. He led the East Carolina University Board of Trustees, the University of North Carolina System Board of Governors, and helped start the Wake Ed Partnership. Jones was also involved with Shaw University, Peace College, and Ravenscroft School. Raleigh has long been blessed by leaders who saw a bigger picture, such as Smedes York, Temple Sloan, Frank Daniels Jr., Jim Goodman, and Jones. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. Triangle mourns passing of Seppi Saidi. Saidi came to Raleigh from Iran and built a widely respected firm. This is written by Lauren Onasorge. Against all odds, entrepreneur Seppi Saidi grew a company from the ground up in a male-dominated field, all with an eye on growth, not just for Seppi Engineering, but for the Triangle. This week, her friends and colleagues mourn her passing after her battle with cancer. She was 62. Saidi's Raleigh story started at age 15 when, as an Iranian high school transfer student in 1978, she saw the Raleigh skyline for the first time out of a plane window. Saidi would stay in Raleigh attending NC State University while the Iranian Revolution swept through her home country. She left the North Carolina Department of Transportation to create Seppi Engineering in 2001. In under 20 years, the company had grown to 300 workers and $40 million in revenue. In 2018, she was named Triangle Business Journal's 2018 Business Person of the Year. The firm sold to Trans Systems in 2022. At the time, Saidi owned about 90% of the company. Saidi also made her mark with leadership positions at some of the Triangle's most prominent nonprofits and government organizations, from the Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority to the North Carolina Chamber of Commerce. John Kane of Kane Realty served on multiple boards with Saidi, said she made an impact. She was very thorough, he said. She wanted to make sure you were thinking about all sides of everything. Wendy Coulter, president of the NC Women Business Owners Hall of Fame, which inducted Saidi in 2022, called her a ray of sunshine. She was full of energy and fire. I remember walking with her around her office. There was just this air of excellence, she said. This is someone I look up to and admire so much for all that she's done. She'll be so missed by this group of women. Proposed bill would raise Medicaid rates for dental care. This is written by Zach Ezone. Lawmakers in North Carolina have proposed legislation that would make dental care more accessible to the state's Medicaid patients. House Bill 60 would raise Medicaid reimbursement rates paid to dental care providers in North Carolina, encouraging more providers to treat Medicaid patients. But the legislation comes as Congress considers potential cuts to federal Medicaid spending. North Carolina's Medicaid reimbursement rates for dental care have largely remained the same since 2008. During this same time, the cost of running a dental practice has increased, making it difficult for dentists to treat Medicaid patients. What's happening is a lot of dentists are at the point where they simply can't afford to see Medicaid patients, or they're dramatically restricting the number of Medicaid patients that they will see, said Jim Goodman, CEO of the North Carolina Dental Society. Only 45% of dentists in North Carolina accept Medicaid, and many of them are not accepting new patients, according to a report last year from a task force convened by the North Carolina Institute of Medicine. Hotel Group CEO puts mansion on market. This is written by Kaylee Thompson. The CEO of a Raleigh hotel company has put his massive mansion on the market to the tune of $6.5 million. Mark Laporte, president and CEO of Concord Hospitality, is selling his North Raleigh home after owning it for 13 years. Coming in just under 18,000 square feet, the home has 7 bedrooms and 12 bathrooms. The Georgian estate sits on a private cul-de-sac in the Barony gated community that is along Pool Lake. The home at 1404 Barony Lake Way is on a large lot totaling 4.46 acres. The mansion boasts several features that help maintain an active lifestyle, including indoor racquetball court, exercise room with steam shower and dry sauna, outdoor lighted tennis court, and a saltwater swimming pool with an infinity edge. The outdoor space is also a hot tub, fireplace, upper terraces, and covered cabana with outdoor kitchen. The outdoor kitchen has a built-in gas grill, island with bar stool seating, sink, microwave, and refrigerator. Inside is a two-story marble foyer with marble staircase, theater room, bar and billiards room, laundry room on every level, en suite for each bedroom, a nanny suite with kitchen and gourmet kitchen. The gourmet kitchen features sub-zero refrigerators, a Wolf range with a griddle and double ovens, ice maker, warming drawer, two large islands, and a wine fridge. There are six fireplaces, a basement, and a six-car garage. Built in 2007, LaPorte bought it in 2012 for $2.8 million, according to Wake County deed records. And our next article is also written by Zach Ezone. RTI cuts 340 more jobs as funding still uncertain. RTI International, based in Research Triangle Park, is the region's largest nonprofit. RTI International, the Triangle's largest nonprofit organization, is advancing another round of layoffs in response to federal funding cuts. It announced in an email March 26 a workforce realignment that will see RTI lay off 340 employees in the U.S., including 177 in North Carolina. These layoffs are in response to unexpected changes in federal funding and broader market shifts, and follow previous staff reductions. Following this recent announcement, RTI has permanently reduced its workforce by more than 500 employees since the beginning of March. RTI says it expects to make additional changes in the coming weeks. Taking this step was not easy, but it's necessary to position RTI for long-term success and strengthen our ability to serve federal, state, and local government and commercial clients, said CEO Tim Gable in a statement. We understand the weight of these decisions and the real impact they have on our staff members. RTI's foundation is strong, and transforming our organization to align with broader market shifts will enable new opportunities for science-driven growth. The layoffs are in response to RTI experiencing cancellations of more than 80 federally funded projects, in addition to numerous other work stoppages, according to a written layoff notice the organization sent to state and local officials March 25. RTI estimates these cancellations and stoppages have reduced its operating revenue by more than 30%. Such rapid and sweeping changes in the federal funding for so many programs was not expected and occurred with little to no advance notice, RTI said in a written notice. RTI expects to terminate at least 525 employees from March 7 through May 1st, according to the notice. The workforce reductions affect RTI's Social, Statistical, and Environmental Sciences Business Unit and its International Development Group. The cuts also affect the organization's general and administrative functions. The nonprofit has an annual budget of more than $1 billion, with most of its revenue coming from the public sector, which includes federal, state, and local governments. As of last year, RTI's workforce totaled 6,038 employees, with 945 based in the Triangle. In fiscal year 2024, the National Institutes of Health awarded RTI grants worth about $396.92 million for scientific research. The nonprofit is also a large recipient of funding from the U.S. Agency for International Development, the federal agency tasked with overseeing foreign aid. Both federal agencies have been targeted for cuts by the Trump administration. Earlier this month, the organization confirmed it was cutting about 150 additional positions, including more than 80 in North Carolina. That followed RTI in February announcing temporary layoffs for 226 U.S. employees, including 61 in North Carolina. The organization no longer has employees on temporary layoffs. RTI's announcement included staff members who transitioned from temporary to permanent layoff status. FHI 360 in Durham, another organization that receives millions of dollars from U.S. aid, has also cut staff in response to reductions in federal funding. The organization earlier this month announced it has furloughed 45% of its U.S. workforce, including more than 150 people in North Carolina. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal. We start with Lauren Onosorge's page, Technology and Innovation. Lee out as CEO of Cornerstone. Chairman takes over carry company on interim basis as CEO search begins. The CEO who took Carrie's Cornerstone building brands private has left the company, meaning one less woman at the top of a manufacturing firm. Rose Lee resigned March 18, according to a securities filing. The reason given is to focus on a personal family matter. The same day, Wayne Ermiter, senior vice president and chief accounting officer, also left the building materials manufacturer. No reason was given. Lee is being replaced in the interim by John Krenicki, chairman of the board. The filing said that Krenicki will not receive any compensation as an officer of the company. The board has engaged a nationally recognized firm to conduct a search for Ms. Lee's successor, the company said in a securities filing. Tina Beskid has been named chief accounting officer effective April 1st. Beskid recently had the same role at manufacturer Resideo Technologies, but before that she served as vice president of finance and investor relations at Cornerstone from 2019 to 2022. Her base salary, according to a filing, will be $438,000 with a target annual bonus equal to 60% of her base salary. Cornerstone used to be a public company selling to Clayton, Dubler, and Rice in a $5.8 billion deal in 2022. At the time, Cornerstone had more than 20,000 total employees. Cornerstone reported $5.5 billion in net sales for 2021, a 20.9% increase from the previous year. At the time, Lee said the vision was to be the premier exterior building solutions company, and our strategy has not changed. We will continue to grow our business through organic growth with a focus on expansive innovation as well as M&A, she said in 2022. Last year, Cornerstone made a $475 million acquisition, that of Mueller Supply Company. Lee became CEO after Jim Metcalf retired in 2021. Triangle mourns passing of brand maven. A noted marketer, CEO, entrepreneur, and investor died suddenly over the weekend. Jim Geike, and that's spelled G-E-I-K-I-E, whose long career spanned leadership roles at Burt's Bees, Cree, and even a new stealth startup, leaves behind a legacy of entrepreneurship. His longtime business partner, John Rapogel, called him a brand maven and a marketing genius. He got it better than just about everyone I've worked with, he said. Take his light bulb moment, literally, at Cree, now known as Wolfspeed. He came up with the slogan for the consumer LED bulbs more than a decade ago, greatest thing since the light bulb. The slogan helped rocket the bulbs to prime shelving at Home Depot. Rapogel, former CEO of Burt's Bees, who had first worked with Geike at Unilever, said it was Geike who unleashed so much of the energy behind Burt. After a stint at Cree, he returned to Burt's Bees, and his rise was swift, all the way to president in 2016. In 2017, he rejoined Rapogel on a new investment firm called One Better Ventures, helping other entrepreneurs realize their startup ambitions. Philip Freeman, founder of Murphy's Natural, said entrepreneurs hung on his words because his words were meaningful. Finding talent key to why firm picked Raleigh. Ralliant, a planned spinoff of Fortive Corporation, recently picked Raleigh for its headquarters. For Raleigh, it's a $2.1 million investment and 180 jobs, paying average salaries of $189,479. In return, the state is offering up $3.3 million in incentives, provided Ralliant meets its milestones. But CEO Tammy Newcomb said the proximity to tech talent was the primary driver of the site selection search. Newcomb said the company was looking for cities with existing pools of engineers and technologists that were also noted for livability. Raleigh fit the bill, not just for its university talent, but its community college system, she said. Now the company is preparing to staff up as it opens a headquarters in the North Hills area. Newcomb said the company is already hiring. She said the company wants to work quickly and has already posted several administrative positions. And finally, IBM layoffs impact RTP, but details are scarce. Layoffs at IBM have impacted Research Triangle Park again. It's unclear how many people were impacted locally, but workers have confirmed that positions in RTP, where IBM houses its largest campus, were included in the cuts. IBM was not specific about the impact RTP, but the company confirmed the cuts through a spokeswoman. IBM has about 7,500 employees. IBM has about 7,500 employees based in RTP. A spokeswoman said the impact is limited to a low single-digit percentage of IBM's global workforce. The company has around 300,000 employees. IBM was more specific in a regulatory filing March 26 when it told the state that it would be cutting more than 70 employees at a site in Winston-Salem at its facility at 1100 Reynolds Boulevard. And now we turn to Zach Ezone's page, Healthcare and Life Sciences. WakeMed looks to revamp campus. Main Raleigh location would be upgraded in process that could last years. WakeMed is in the early stages of a project that would reshape its main Raleigh campus. The health system plans to construct a new patient bed tower, emergency department, and surgical suite to replace some of the existing spaces at its campus on New Bern Avenue. This is a long-term 10 to 15-year plan that would require a major capital investment from WakeMed. This project would see WakeMed replace some of its older facilities, which opened in the early 1960s. This includes, for example, intensive care unit beds that have been around since the 1970s. While these older facilities are still functional, they no longer meet the market standard, said Tom Cavender, WakeMed's vice president of facilities and construction. There are certain things that people expect when they visit their healthcare provider, and we want to make sure that we're in a position of being able to meet those expectations or exceed those for our patients, Cavender said. WakeMed is still working out the details. For example, Cavender said it is too early to say how many of the hospital's more than 500 beds would be in the new tower. Without disclosing specific dollar amounts, Cavender said this would be a significant investment for WakeMed. We're at the very early phases of this, and it's really at a 50,000-foot view, he said. WakeMed in December submitted a request to the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services seeking confirmation that the proposal would be exempt from the Certificate of Need process. The state regulator provided that confirmation in February as the project does not involve changes in the hospital's number of licensed acute care beds or operating rooms. The new tower would be adjacent and directly connected to the existing hospital, according to WakeMed's written notice to DHHS. Pharma giant kicks off $2 billion expansion in Wilson. Johnson & Johnson has kicked off construction on a $2 billion biologics manufacturing facility in Wilson, and the 500,000-square-foot facility will employ more than 500 people once it's fully operational. Johnson & Johnson, based in New Jersey, is preparing the site to begin steel work. Construction will be complete in 2028, after which the company will begin qualifying equipment and validating the manufacturing processes to begin producing medicines. The plant will be under the Janssen Biotech subsidiary. Including construction and operations at the facility, the project is expected to create more than 5,000 jobs. Once operational, J&J will have more than 500 employees and contractors at the site. The company told the state that jobs at the plant will pay a minimum average wage of just shy of $109,000. J&J is investing in this facility to support its pipeline of innovation medicines, said Dapo Ajayi, vice president of supply chain at Johnson & Johnson Innovative Medicine. This includes medicines targeting cancer and other diseases. This facility is about expanding our capacity to be able to support this really exciting portfolio of products that are coming through from Johnson & Johnson, Ajayi said. Durham firm looks to surge growing sales. A Durham medical device company has raised $14 million to scale its business amid steady growth. 410 Medical is developing products to rapidly deliver blood or intravenous fluids to critically ill patients. The additional funding will support the company's efforts to expand its commercial footprint and develop its next generation of products. With the latest funding, 410 Medical has added new investors, including Rex Health Ventures. CEO Kyle Chenet said the firm has experienced 50% year-over-year growth in top-line sales. Its LifeFlow product is used to quickly deliver fluid and blood products to patients suffering from sepsis, hemorrhagic shock, and other life-threatening conditions. Since it is launched, healthcare providers have used the product to treat about 50,000 patients. And finally, biotech firm sues to block copies of its $400 million drug. A biotechnology company in Durham has filed a federal lawsuit claiming that another company's generic version of its main revenue generator would infringe on multiple patents. BioCryst Pharmaceuticals on March 10 sued Hetero, a generic drug maker in India, and other related companies, saying the acts of infringement would cause the company irreparable harm. The lawsuit involves patents related to or Lideo, which generated more than $400 million in net revenue last year for BioCryst. BioCryst sued in response to Anora Pharma Private Limited, saying it has filed with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration seeking approval to manufacture, use, or sell a generic version of Orladeyo in the U.S. And now we turn to Ben Tobin's page, Greater Triangle. Local builder adds Greenville land. Bill Clark Home snags 189 acres just southeast of downtown Greenville. A home builder active in the Greenville area has spent millions to acquire hundreds of acres for a potential future project. An LLC tied to Bill Clark Homes purchased just shy of 189 acres off the intersection of Hudson's Crossroads Road and Mills Road in Pitt County for a little under $2 million last month, according to Pitt County deed records. The land sits southeast of downtown Greenville and is zoned for residential agricultural, or RA, use. Representatives of Bill Clark Homes did not respond to requests seeking comment on what they plan to do with the land. The home builder says on its website it is family-owned and operated with offices in Greenville and Wilmington. Bill Clark Homes has roughly 11 communities around the Greenville area, with homes starting from the upper 200,000s to the lower 400,000s, depending on the community. Founder Bill Clark started the company in 1977. The possibility of new homes continues as Greenville tries to cement itself as one of the largest cities in eastern North Carolina, buoyed by the growing presence of East Carolina University and the affordability of land and housing there versus the core of Research Triangle. The town also benefits from having excellent health care facilities, led by the ECU Health Medical Center. One thing is for sure, as the area continues to attract more major investments, which in turn create jobs, Greenville will need more homes to keep up with an incoming workforce. In July 2024, Japanese medical equipment manufacturer Nipro announced that it would be investing roughly $400 million to create 232 jobs in Greenville. And in April 2024, Vietnamese clean energy company Boviet Solar announced plans to spend nearly $300 million to establish a 1 million square foot, 900 job facility in the city. Texas firm grabs land close to Briar Chapel. A Texas-based real estate firm has scooped up hundreds of acres in northeast Chatham County, a property that once was discussed to be part of a potential mixed-use project. Farrington Land Holdings, an LLC tied to Austin-based Joe Williams Land Bank Fund, purchased 370 acres off Parker Herndon Road near Briar Chapel for close to $15 million this month, according to Chatham County deed records. The seven parcels included in the sale are zoned for residential use. Representatives of the fund did not respond to requests seeking comment. Per the company's website, the firm works closely with real estate company Keller Williams to obtain access to a broad range of investment properties that are often off-market and often unknown to the fund's competitors. The land had, at least at one point, been discussed to be the site of a mixed-use development. Triangle Business Journal reported in August 2021 that the sellers of this property, Congruous LLC of Pittsburgh, received approval to change the boundaries of a Chatham County ordinance to pave the way for a mixed-use development. Briar Chapel, a census-designated area, sits between Pittsburgh and Chapel Hill off Highway 15-501. Nashville Junction gets rezoning nod. A mixed-use redevelopment plan is moving forward in Nashville. The Nashville Town Council voted during a recent meeting to approve a conditional rezoning for Nashville Junction, a project that could usher in restaurants, retail, and other businesses at the former Nashville Building Supply Company building at 723 Barn Street. The project was first pitched in 2021 by Rocky Mount developer Michael Hurt of Hurt LLC. It is a public-private partnership with both the town of Nashville and the developer paying in. The property was rezoned from industrial to conditional zoning, non-residential, to allow for certain businesses to operate in the development. Overall, plans for Nashville Junction call for 20,000 square feet inside the old Nashville Building Supply Company warehouse with 12 spots for various businesses, space for a farmer's market, a pavilion for performing arts and other activities, and a green space and audience area. And finally, home builder continues adding projects in region. A Texas home builder has acquired hundreds of acres straddling two growing counties. LGI Homes purchased 368 acres off Seminole Road near the Harnett-Lee County line for around $6.4 million earlier this month, according to Harnett County deed records. The land has a Broadway address and is zoned for residential agricultural, RA, use per tax records. The seller is an LLC tied to local developer Bobby Branch, who paid $4 million for it in 2022. LGI Homes has been active in the region in recent years. Triangle Business Journal reported in June 2024 that the home builder purchased 34.5 acres in Youngsville, and per the home builder's website, it has communities in Raleigh, Sanford, Holly Springs, Zebulon, and Youngsville. And our last reporter page is Real Estate and Development, written by Kaylee Thompson. Restaurant space sells an auction. Michael Hinderleader buys former Durham home of Cuban restaurant Copa. A downtown Durham restaurant space has been sold in a bankruptcy auction. The space for Cuban restaurant Copa was sold for $825,000 in the January bankruptcy auction, according to Durham County deed records. The highest bidder was Michael Hinderleader with his 107 West Main LLC, which is under the umbrella of his Aspire Property Group. Positioned on 0.14 acres near the corner of West Main Street and Highway 15, the restaurant is on the ground floor of a two-story building. After facing mounting debt due to U.S. Small Business Association loans, Copa closed in August. The closure came after owners Elizabeth Turnbull and Roberto Copa Matos filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The lien from Celtic Bank is more than $1.5 million, but since the sale was for less than that, the bank agreed to being paid $130,000. Hinderleader said the property had a good value add and that Durham is generally a safe investment. Hinderleader's plan is to keep it a restaurant, but because the space is so big, he is considering splitting it into two spots and looking for local restaurateurs, especially well-established ones who are looking for a second location. Food and beverage stuff, when it comes to the hood systems and all that kind of stuff you have to put in, it gets really expensive. There's a high barrier of entry to get into building out those spaces. I think that this makes sense to keep its current use and maybe make some reconfigurations to the floor plan, Hinderleader said. The sale is only for the restaurant space, not the entire building, as the second story has residential condos that people own. The restaurant space includes 3,444 square feet of ground floor space and 1,620 square feet of a basement with a private banquet area and storage. Huge land sale in Garner goes for $285,000 per acre. More than 100 acres in southeast Garner sold for a high price. NCTH Holdings LLC bought 127.98 acres for $36.48 million, according to Wake County deed records. The LLC has a principal address associated with Gregory Pool Equipment Company, the Eastern North Carolina Caterpillar dealer. The land is halfway between Garner and Clayton. The transaction comes out to $285,000 per acre for the land at 5100 Rainer Road. The development website shows an applicant is in the process of applying for a project titled Cougar Project and is labeled industrial. No further information is available. However, the engines are Caterpillar for Cougar vehicles for the military. Cougars are mine-resistant, ambush-protected infantry vehicles and come in two configurations in 4x4 and 6x6. The land is partially forested and has an assessed value of about $10.8 million. And finally, California developer wins rezoning. A Los Angeles company that develops affordable housing will soon be able to break into the Raleigh market. Standard Communities received unanimous approval for its rezoning in Southeast Raleigh from the Raleigh City Council during its March 18 meeting. The developer plans to build affordable housing near the interchange for Interstates 40 and 440. The new zoning is residential mixed use up to four stories with conditions. The property at 2340 Compassionate Drive was previously zoned residential 6 with a special highway overlay district. The 9.11 acre property is owned by Compassionate Tabernacle of Faith Missionary Baptist Church and has an assessed value of $501,050. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Executive Voice Q&A column, this one featuring Julia Kunlow. Closer look, job, president, Evolution Safety Resources, hometown, Chemung, New Jersey, family, husband, two children, education, BS, corporate communication, James Madison University, MS, occupational health and safety, Columbia Southern University, first ever job, managing an ice cream shop. As a kid in New Jersey, Julia Kunlo knew exactly what she wanted to be, the first female president. The overarching theme? To be her own boss. Kunlo's father was in construction, so it's a world she knew well, but it's not a sector where she saw herself, at least not until she was working in her chosen field, advertising, and she found herself wanting something more. A mentor she admired asked her if she had considered construction. When you work in spaces where you look, look like anyone else, you're not as memorable. She recalls her friend saying, "You don't have as much power." So she took the leap and fell in love with it. Now president of construction consultancy Evolution Safety Resources, which she founded in 2017, Kunlo said it was ultimately the people, the tight-knit community that values the person and not just the work. "The biggest challenge is just that I love it so much," she said. "It's turning it off so that I can focus on the other areas of my life." Kunlo makes it work. Her secret as she juggles a million balls is to find the ones made of glass. "You focus on those," she said. "It's give and take. You can't keep them all up in the air at once." What's the biggest change you expect to see in your industry in the next 10 years? Safety in the construction space is getting written into more and more contracts as a requirement of work. I expect to see an increase in the need for on-site safety personnel, which will ultimately become a strain on our labor force. Considering the boom in data center work we're seeing, the importance of degrees and credentials in our space will continue to soar, creating an even tighter labor pool. What's a time that you hit a solid hurdle in your professional career, and how did you overcome it? I do best when in crisis mode. Overcoming any solid hurdle ultimately comes down to being decisive, prioritizing progress over perfection, and doing what you can with what you have until you bring yourself into a better position. It's so important to rally your team in these moments so that everyone can row in the same direction with a positive outlook. A well-synchronized team will always outperform any individual player. How can the construction industry attract more women? I love the mantra of, if you can see it, you can be it. To attract more women and men into the industry, we need to introduce them to the space early in their lives when they are beginning to visualize their adult years. What books should every business leader read? Extreme Ownership and Radical Candor. What's the best piece of advice you ever received? It wasn't given to me directly, but it's a quote I love. Nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. Theodore Roosevelt. Especially in the world of consulting, it's so important to be authentic and allow your customers and community to see who you are and what you care about. It builds trust and ultimately respect, which are requirements of any long-term partnership. What's your go-to spot for a business lunch? I love Stir in North Raleigh. And finally, how do you de-stress? I shake off stress by solving the problem and coming up with a plan in my mind. Usually that means writing it down, organizing my action plan, and then staying up a few nights to make it happen until I'm back in control. For things out of my control, I firmly believe in the power of getting outside and moving your body. There's not a lot of things in this world that can't be made a little better with sunshine, fresh air, and a run. And this was written by Lauren Onosorge. And turning to general news in the Triangle Business Journal, trampolines, baseball give center new life. North South Station has a new tenant mix as the retail center gets a refresh. This article is written by Kate Tracy. New tenants and a facelift are breathing life into a shopping center south of downtown Raleigh. North South Station, located along Garner Station Boulevard, is getting a trampoline park, baseball center, and other updates. Nova Trampoline and Adventure Park leased 46,328 square feet last year at 1514 Garner Station Boulevard in the former Carly C's grocery store. The business plans to open this July, according to Justin Phillips, principal and broker at Property Resources. He said the growth in South Raleigh has made the shopping center a smart bet for Nova. Nova operates as a franchise, and activities also include a zip line, climbing wall, ropes course, and arcade area, according to its website. Grand Slam USA, a baseball and softball facility, signed a 15-year lease at North South Station in the former Big Lots at 1515 Garner Station Boulevard. Grand Slam has been in the former Kmart building on Western Boulevard. Company President John Geyer said the move is an expansion for Grand Slam, going from 20,000 square feet to 32,000 at the former Big Lots. Meanwhile, fashion retailer Belk recently extended its lease to 2036 at 1450 Garner Station Boulevard, according to Phillips. North South Station is owned by Endeavor Equities and managed by Madison Properties. The owners had previously put the shopping center up for sale with the intention that another group would come in and redevelop the site. However, difficulties with real estate financing made a sale challenging, so the owners bought Phillips and broker Mike Peoples on to lease the center. The owners are also investing in the property with paint and facade upgrades, landscaping, parking lot improvements, updated lighting, and security features. Vacancy at the 310,000 square foot center is now 4%. A year ago, it was 9 or 10%, according to Phillips. And with our remaining time, we'll read as much as we can of the guest column on the Viewpoint page. This Viewpoint is written by John Hood, who is a John Locke Foundation board member in Raleigh. The headline, Strong Economies Are Also Messy. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, North Carolina businesses shed nearly 920,000 jobs over the last 12-month period. Disturbing? Nah, don't worry. Such a rate of job loss is fairly normal. Businesses shrink. Some shut down entirely. Their employees, contractors, and vendors must find other sources of income. Buildings, equipment, and other capital get repurposed. Investment flows elsewhere. You see, I never claimed we experienced a net loss of 920,000 jobs. During the same 12-month period through mid-2024, these data take a while to analyze and report. North Carolina businesses added 959,501 positions. The job creation rate, new positions divided by total employment, ranged from 5% to 6.6% per quarter. Most economic statistics the media report and politicians discuss are net numbers, not gross. During 2024, North Carolina netted 69,000 new private sector jobs, an increase of 1.6%. Add in government and total employment rose by 84,000 last year, up 1.7%. North Carolina's job market is stronger than in most other states, but if you stare too much at the net tree, you'll miss the broader forest. Employers didn't add tens of thousands of new jobs to a stable base of some 5 million. During those 12 months, some 40,000 new establishments opened. Some existing firms expanded their workforce explosively, moderately, or slightly. Others held the line or slimmed down so they could add in others, or downsize to become more profitable, or simply failed. But we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for this article. And he basically just says that a successful economy can often be messy. And I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. And if you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.